Nikki Stott is longtime host and producer for Australian environmental current affairs program Earth Matters. They also work with Community Radio 3CR as a trainer. During a recent Commons Social Change Library Skills session, they spoke with myself, Ian McIntyre, about preparing, conducting and producing entertaining and informative interviews. This podcast features excerpts from our conversation and offers a range of tips and suggestions. Thanks to Aoife Carly Hannan for sharing questions from the audience at the end. Why do you think interviews and I guess conversations are a good format?
I think, well, if we're talking about radio, but also I think this is true for film and television as well, and also probably for the written word as well, for print media, is that a conversation is way more interesting than a monologue, basically. Like the more kind of players, because when an interview is kind of a story, right? You're telling a story one way or the other. And so the more characters you can bring in, the more interesting it is.
We're talking about tonight sort of interviews, I guess that could be used for multiple things. So, you know, radio, podcast, you know, TV and video, or could be transcribed or whatever. But I guess just in terms of that sort of, I suppose the audio side of things, what's good about interviews?
Yeah, definitely. There's a sort of a rule of thumb with radio that 7 minutes is the absolute longest you would want to hear the sound of one person's voice. And really, I think that's pushing it. I think, you know, and there's instances where that rule gets broken all the time. Oral histories are a great example. And there is, like styles of radio, styles of interviews where the interviewer takes their questions out and it's just the answers. But even that, you have to break it up. You can't just have someone talking for 30 minutes. You know, you might break it up with a little music bridge or maybe an announcement or whatever. But I just think an interview is an easy way to do that and a natural way to do that without having to do a lot of editing. You can just record it. You can record it in one go and you're going to get, yeah, the ear needs to have that variety of sounds and that diversity of sounds, or people get bored. And really, like, an interview is a lot of work. You want people to listen to it or read it or engage with it.
You've done loads of interviews, but what would be one of the favorites that you've done? And
it's such a hard I'm so bad at those what's your favorite thing. A top five or a top 10. I won't do a top 10, don't worry about that. But I think there's different kinds of favorites. There's one from 2019 that I really enjoyed because it was a really sciencey one, and it was on a new GMO technology. And so I interviewed three people, and it was partly about stuff that was happening in Australia and partly about stuff that was happening in Burkina Faso in Africa. So I spoke to someone in Africa, actually based in Nigeria, but about Burkina Faso. And then I spoke to someone in Australia, and then I also spoke to someone in Montreal who'd been making a documentary. So there was a really nice cross-global kind of cross-section of interviewees, and they were all women. And I had to do a lot of research, but it was really enjoyable putting it all together. It took a long time. So I kind of love that, really getting down and stuck into it. But then another interview I did this year that really surprised me how much I enjoyed it was just a quick update that I did with the Northeast Forest Alliance in up in north coast of New South Wales, and it was with their founder, who's a man called Dylan Pugh. And I don't usually like interviewing cis white men on Earth Matters because I feel like they sort of dominate the environment movement. In a lot of other media, they're often the spokespeople for organizations and collectives and campaigns. And so we try to get a bit more diversity on Earth Matters in terms of who we pick for guests. But he was their guy, so I got on the phone with him. And I was really surprised because, and I didn't do a lot of research because it was, you know, I'm pretty down with forest activism. So I sort of, I know the questions to ask, but I was really surprised because it turned out that he was an ex-Taranya Creek participant back in the 70s. Was it 70s, Ian?
Yeah, late 70s. Yeah.
And so then we chatted about that, and we just ended up having this wonderful interview that I hadn't expected to have. And then we were talking about the impact of the 2019-2020 fires on Terania Creek and had a big cry and it was just, you know, it just surprised me. So I guess that's one extreme to the other one. The GMO one, like I did so much research and it was really hard and it was a lot of work and it was a lot of editing. And this other interview, I didn't prepare at all and I wasn't even that excited about it. And both of them were really satisfying. So that's the kind of spectrum, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's wonderful when you get that kind of rapport with someone in an interview. And I guess sometimes you don't have much information to go on. Or you don't have much time to do research, and other times you do. So, I wanted to ask you about, I mean, you've outlined two very different processes there. So I guess I wanted to ask you about, what's the research sort of process look like for you, or is it always different?
No, I do. I definitely do have a process that I usually do. I mean, even when I say I did no research with Dylan, I did, they had a court case coming up, so I did a little bit of research on what they were going to court about and all that sort of thing. So I got some bare basics, but it was like 30 minutes of research, you know, it wasn't like a big thing. Well, yeah, so when I'm thinking about an interview, for Earth Matters, obviously I'm thinking about it in the context of Earth Matters, but I think my advice to people would be like, the first thing you do when you're doing an interview is think about where are you publishing that interview? Like, is it for a radio show? Is it for some sort of print media? Is it on television or for a film, documentary or whatever? And the reason I say that is because you need to think about who's going to be listening to this interview or watching this interview or reading this interview, because they're the people that you're conducting the interview for and packaging it up for. So so you're kind of thinking, well, what are they going to want to hear or read about or see? So you're thinking about that. You're thinking about your audience or your listeners or your readership. But then you're also thinking about, well, what's my idea? What's my topic? So you got your audience and you got your topic. And so that's where I'll always start. Although obviously I kind of, if it's for Earth Matters, I'm pretty used to who the audience is, so I don't have to think about it too much. But in the case of Earth Matters, it would be activist community and grassroots, frontline people impacted by environmental issues. And so then I'll take it from that and I'll go, I've got my topic, I know who the audience is. And so then I'll think, well, who can I interview about this topic? So I'll start to do a little bit of research on it, maybe see what other news medias have been covering. And I'm also at this point, I'm starting to think, what's my angle? What's my angle on the topic? What's my agenda? Even though it's for an audience, it's like, what do I think about this? What do I say about this? So as I've already mentioned, for Earth Matters, we'll usually try to get diversity with our guests. So I'll think, well, is there a woman or a gender non-conforming person that I can speak to instead of, as this white man? Can I get someone who is a person of color or Black or from culturally, linguistically diverse background rather than, someone who's white, all of that sort of stuff. What sort of representation am I trying to get in my guest? I mean, not to do a trite sort of box tick or anything, but like what I'm thinking is who, I've got a platform, who can I offer it to? And it's my obligation to offer it to someone who doesn't usually get to have a voice. So that's what I look for in a guest, is someone who doesn't usually get to have a voice. If I can find someone like that, that's ideal for me personally. And then I'll probably try, I know what my angles are usually going to be in terms of my own kind of politics and what's interesting to me. So then I'll start to write out some subtopics and reach out to the guest and see if they're interested, I guess.
And any kind of tips, I guess, within that contacting people? Because often, it can be hard to sort of track people down. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps less with kind of current, you know, with current campaigns, because often, you know, there's a contact or whatever. But if you're kind of trying to find people who, you know, from a campaign for some years ago for a case study or something, any tips?
Yeah, it's really hard. You have to be really sleuthy. You have to do things like, if you know there's someone you want but you're not sure how to contact them, well, obviously, first of all, I'll check social media, which is a bit tricky for me because I don't have a Facebook account. So that can be hard. We do sort of have one for Earth Matters, but it doesn't have any friends. We just have it to have a Facebook page. So when I contact people on that, it looks weird because the account has no friends. Twitter, I can contact people through because we have an Earth Matters account for that. But also I might just do a search on Google or whatever. You use DuckDuckGo or whatever, with the person's name and like maybe PH or phone or contact, or and just see what comes up. If there's an organization that I know they're associated with, I might try to contact the organization and see if I can get their – again, it sort of depends on how much time you've got. Like you said, you don't always have a lot of time. I'll just try anything I can to try to find out their contacts.
So, you know, you're sort of – your question writing process, you've sort of said, you know, you'll do your research, you think about your angles, you'll come up with your topics, your subtopics, and I guess that's kind of what the questions come out of that. Anything else you want to mention about sort of questions?
Oh, that reminds me. I do have a really great little – checklist that I can, I'll just share it in the chat about preparing for interviews. So this is a good little sort of, this is a lot here, so obviously I'm not going to go through it tonight. Everyone can have a look at it. I think, like, in terms of writing questions as well, you know, if you start with that, with your topic, and then you think about what your angle is, and then maybe break that topic down into some subtopics, and then maybe break them down into some bullet points, and then that's kind of the basis of your question. And so if you think about, like, who is it, what is it, the who, what, where, why, how, which is kind of like a journalism, I hate journalism, but it's like a journalism kind of little thing that journalism students learn at the first year of uni. But it's kind of a good thing to sort of think about, like, who is it? So I'll write down, so like the first question will be like, who am I interviewing and what am I interviewing them about? And so what I'll often get people to do for radio is get them to introduce themselves and say their own name, because that way you've got them pronouncing their own name, which is really handy later on when you need to write, when you need to write your tags, your intro and outro tags for the show. And I think even for print media, it doesn't hurt, you know, to just get people to introduce themselves, because people might have different ways that they would introduce themselves in different contexts, you know. So, like, you might say, like, you're interviewing a First Nations elder, and they have like a lot of different roles and kind of things that they're known for, but you're interviewing them about just one specific kind of topic. They might not necessarily want to be introduced in all of their other roles and capacities. So I think it's really important to find out how people would like to be introduced in the context of the interview. Yeah, so that's and one good easy way to do that is just to get them to introduce themselves. So you say something like, can you just introduce yourself and also what your role is with, say, if it's about a campaign, what your role is with a campaign, or, you know, if it's about more of a research thing, like a book or something, about, you know, introduce yourself and, you know, as a writer or as a researcher or whatever, just introduce yourself in the context of what our topic is today. How do you connect with this topic? Why are you here? Why am I interviewing you? So then you can kind of ground the your audience or listeners or whatever, readers, into who and what this interview is about right from the start. The convention with interviewing is that there's a beginning, a middle and an end, right?
So that's, you've got your questions together. I guess the next step is sort of thinking about how you capture what you're doing. So what kind of equipment and programs do you use for recording interviews? And I guess let's start from if you're doing it from home rather than in the wild, so to speak.
I think it was really great for 3CR in a way, the lockdowns, because it got all of our programmers really talking about sharing resources with each other, of like, how can we make radio if we can't, you know, have the luxury of having a radio studio. So I have a portable digital recorder. It's a Zoom H4, which is a pretty standard digital recorder that a lot of people have. And you can plug two external microphones into them. So they're perfect for podcasting, for interviews where you've just got you and one other person. You can get some attachments to have four microphones plugged into them if you really want to, but two is really fine, you know. And so I've got that and a couple of microphones and one microphone stand. I really need to get another microphone stand, a good pair of headphones and a laptop with some software for editing. That's my equipment. Look, it really depends. The reason I have that is that I get paid to do stuff sometimes. Not always, but sometimes. And so I need to have a really professional setup, right? But let's just say, I didn't have that and I didn't have any money. Then, you know, worst case scenario, I've got a phone. I can record on my phone. I've got a laptop that I can record on, you know. As long as you've got some kind of device that has a microphone and a way to some sort of software or function on it where you can press record, then you can potentially do an interview with that device.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting how, I mean, we'll get onto it in a minute around sound. I mean, obviously you want to get the best sound you can, but one of the things I think that changed perhaps a bit during lockdown as well was, and maybe it's also changed with, you know, video sharing and so forth, is that perhaps people's standards, you know, of what we expect in terms of, you know, sound quality has come down a bit, which potentially means you don't need the best gear. I mean, I think we were chatting the other day and you were talking about even with Zoom that there's some functions within that, and that's something that a lot of people, you know, have access to.
Absolutely. And actually Zoom, if I'm doing an interview, a remote interview, which I often do with Earth Matters, you know, we're not, even though Earth Matters is a 3CR show and 3CR's based in Melbourne, we're rarely doing interviews with people in Melbourne. We broadcast also on the community radio network. So we broadcast on other community radio stations around Australia, and also just a lot of environmental activism is happening outside of the city, right? 90% of the interviews, probably more than 95% of the interviews that I do for Earth Matters these days are on Zoom, because it's just a really great, easy application to use for doing remote interviews with people. It's excellent. And I think the sound quality, whatever they did, they really improved the sound quality over the last 2 or 3 years with Zoom. So yeah, but there's a couple of little things you can do also in the settings to make it sound better. If you go into the settings if you click on the little microphone symbol in the bottom left and you go into the audio settings and then you click on the left, there's like a menu on the left that says audio. If you can afford it, if it becomes like a thing that you want to do on a regular basis, or if you get some funding, like a grant or something, to record a whole bunch of interviews for whatever reason, for whatever your project is, I think it's worth getting the business Zoom if you can, because then there's like some settings under that don't show up on the free Zoom that you can click. There's high fidelity music, echo cancellation, stereo audio, whatever. There's these three things that you can click that make it sound better. But even with the free Zoom, I believe when you click on audio or maybe recording, one of those two, there's a box where it says show in meeting option to enable original sound. So you should definitely click that. And then down in recording on that same menu on the left, There's a whole bunch of stuff, but one of them says record a separate audio file for each participant. And so that's really fabulous because then you end up with a bunch. You don't get that thing where everyone accidentally talks over the top of each other. So you get a much better quality sound, I think, if you can click those two things, even in the free one. But also, in terms of getting a better sound, it's good to sort of think, well, when I'm, like right now, when I'm talking to you, if I move my mouth closer to the keyboard, this, you can probably hear that the sound's getting better because I'm getting closer to the microphone. Maybe I get a $20 or $30 headset with a microphone or, you know, how can I, is there a cheap way, like within my budget, that I can make it sound better if I don't have a particularly good microphone in my laptop? And the same with the person at the other end. Like maybe they have a headset and they're not using it, but if you suggest to them, can we try it with their headset? It might sound better. So that's something you might want to think about as well is, and even, you know, working out where the microphone might be located on their computer, if they can get a bit closer to the laptop, that's going to sound better than if they're sitting really far away, sitting all the way over here like this, then maybe the sound isn't so good. Because the thing about podcasting and radio in particular is that you want to get that intimate sound. That's what makes it so great, is that it's this really, it feels like you're right next to that person. So if you are recording thinking this is going to be for a podcast or for radio, you want to get people close to that microphone because you want to get that intimate sound.
It's great to get it as good as possible, even if it's going to be a print interview, because you want to be able to easily hear what was said when you're doing your transcribing and your logging. So, and of course you can use interviews potentially in a number of ways. So, you know, you might use it as the basis. You might not have any transcription. You might just use it as the basis of an article, but then you can also, if the sound sort of captured well at the beginning, you've got the potential then to use it, you know, for other things.
Yeah. And also, like, just another thing I might quickly say, like if you're a person who's got like a kind of old laptop the sound isn't that great. Everyone's got a mobile phone as well. So maybe try, and you can install Zoom on your mobile phone as well. So maybe do a little experiment where you try just recording yourself, because you can just open a meeting in Zoom and record yourself. You don't have to be with other people. So just try recording yourself in Zoom on your computer and then record yourself in Zoom on your phone and then compare the two to see which one sounds better. So, yeah, experiment.
Do you usually send interviewees questions beforehand, or do you sort of prefer them to come in cold?
This is such a, it's a great question, Ian. There's arguments for and against doing that. I think you've got to look at it. My advice would be to take it on a case by case basis, because the downside of sending your guests interview questions, especially if they're one of those diligent people who writes out heaps of notes and stuff, is that they end up kind of coming with all their answers written out on a piece of paper, worst case scenario, and you ask the question and they read it and that's like, you know, going to be boring as hell. So you lose all that sort of sense of spontaneity. You sort of know where you want the interview to go, but also it could go in this other unexpected and wonderful direction that, you know, that you didn't expect. So usually I don't send people the questions for that reason, but sometimes I think there's a very good argument for sending people questions, particularly if it's going to be an interview about a sensitive topic. You know, particularly because I work with community media. So, you know, in community media, you're not trying to do an expose. You're not trying to, you know, catch someone out or trick them, or it's not predatory media. It's, there's a duty of care. Almost always you've got a duty of care to your guest, right? So if you're going to be talking about, a topic that's quite sensitive, something that could be triggering for your guest in some way, then maybe it's a good idea to share the questions with them beforehand and go, look, or at least maybe if not the actual questions, then certainly some bullet points like, these are the subtopics that I'm thinking of talking about. How do you feel about these? Are these okay? Are you okay with it? You know what I mean? And maybe collaborate with your guest a little bit on the questions. if they're open to that in a situation like that, your guests would really appreciate it. And also it would go a long way to developing a warm rapport between you before you get in the studio or wherever you're going to do the interview.
Yeah, well, I guess picking up on that point about rapport, so is there anything you do before interviews to help make the guest feel comfortable?
Yeah, I usually get them drunk. No, well, this is another hard thing. This is why I always end up with these really long interviews when I record that I then have spent hours editing. Because I do, if it's someone I don't know and they are nervous, if they're not nervous, then there's no problem really. You can just smash it out. But if they are a bit nervous, sometimes they could take like 10, 20 minutes to just stop kind of having that shaky sound in their voice and just relax and actually start to enjoy themselves in the interview. So I don't know, this is just me, but I feel like if they need that, then I'll do that for them, you know? I'll take longer to let them warm up. It's really about just sort of thinking, well, who am I as an interviewer? What are my sort of personal ethics when it comes to creating an interview space? So I like to make it really safe and secure and take the time to develop that rapport if I can. Because then people open up to you and they give you all that goodness that you want from them. So, and you actually, it becomes a collaboration. You make something great together.
That's a fantastic point, yeah. Maria. So, wrap
and a glass
up.
Of water. Give them a glass of water.
That's a fantastic point. Maybe we'll wrap up sort of here. There's heaps of other things I could ask you, but guess it would be great to see if, yeah, any of the people who've joined us tonight have got any questions.
Well, people are thinking, I did just remember I had a little link for a good article for universally applicable questions.
Ah, okay.
You know, like it's actually a pretty good little article. I got it from a site called Transom, which is sort of has a lot of stuff about podcasting. There's some great kind of standard questions that you could ask in any interview, theoretically. It could be an interview guest and you don't even know who they are and you could ask them all these questions.
Aoife, could you read that question? I can't see it all.
Yeah, awesome. So Nadia's asked, they'd be interested in your thoughts/advice. When an interview goes off the rails from what you planned, either in a good or bad way, do you always try to steer it back to what you planned or do you sometimes just go with it?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Well, obviously, if it's going off the rails in a bad way, I'll definitely try to steer it back. If someone's just kind of going on, and I definitely know that that's not something that I want to include in the actual published version of the interview, then I'll definitely try to steer it back as politely and quickly as possible. If it's going off the rails in a good way, I'll let that shit go. I'm into that. But that's just my style. Like I like random stuff. I like it when random stuff happens. Yeah, I feel like the thing with interviewing, it's like anything, right? It's a skill. So the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the more you develop your own style and then it becomes sort of, a lot of it becomes kind of second nature. Like it's sort of, you don't even really think about it. So it's okay, I think, if you do an interview and it does actually not turn out that well, you know, like anything like that, don't be afraid to make mistakes. I would think follow your instincts. But also, I think if I could give some good advice as far as like how you kind of steer it, of steering interviews and taking control with interviews, is that when I started out, I see a lot of people when they start out with interviewing, they feel so grateful that this person has agreed to do an interview with them, but they're sort of almost like too afraid to be in control or to kind of take a sort of a directorial role in the interview and to be the facilitator. They're sort of maybe a bit timid, but the person that you're interviewing expects you to facilitate the interview. And you are the person who is deciding which direction it goes in. That's your job. So, and they kind of will need you to do that because they might not know how to do that themselves. So don't feel bad if you have to go, look, I'm going to stop you there because we're going in a direction that is not really where we need to go. Let's start talking about this thing over here or whatever.
So Mark's asked, do you share the editing with the guest before final posting?
I like to. I try to, especially with someone who was super nervous about it or really, really super invested in it, I will. You know, if it's someone who's like a regular, like say if it's an Earth Matters interview and it's someone who's a regular campaigner who does interviews all the time, then maybe, you know, I just share it with them. I know that they know where to find it, so maybe I don't really bother doing it. But if someone who I know it's their first ever interview and they're like super invested in it and they poured their heart and soul into it, then I will write an email to them afterwards and be like, oh, the interview turned out really great. Have a listen. Check it out. Here it is. Let me know what you think. Before, sharing it before, you're sort of leaving yourself open with some people going, oh, I don't like it. Let's do it all again. Which you definitely don't want. I would, again, I think that would fall into the only time where I would do that would be, again, where it was a situation where it was a sensitive topic and where there needed to be some protocols and consultation. You know, say if it was, a culture, like some cultural protocols that I needed to ensure, you know, that it was all okay in that sort of way, I might send it through to the person then to check and be like, okay, so this is the final thing. Do you want to just have a listen before we publish it to make sure that there's nothing problematic in here? But again, I'd also be careful not to assume that they had the time and the capacity to do that.
Just to chip in, I think it can vary depending, I guess, on, you know, again, where you're publishing it. You know, like I think something on a current affairs radio type program, maybe, you know, you're under a lot more time sensitivity or whatever. Mm. If you're researching something to do with history, then maybe you want to share it because when they've had a bit more time to think about it, they're going to, you know, things are going to come back to them that they missed.
Yeah, definitely you're right, though. If it's a research project, like a academic research project or some other kind of research project, you might need to even do a second interview or something like that. But then, yeah, at some point you've got to draw a line in the sand and go, right, this is what it is.
One's just from Adele, just say, asking, when you're speaking with people about potentially tricking topics, what would you recommend about support or check-in they might want after, aside from being careful not to inappropriately step into a counsellor role?
Yeah, I would make sure that any support that I offered was specific to their actual experience of engaging with the interview and having the interview published. So I would make sure that my support was about the interview. Be like, so yeah, if it was a potentially triggering topic, then I would definitely get them to listen to the interview before I published. That would be an example of a situation where I would do that. Part of the interview would require having a trigger warning. You always want to put a trigger warning for triggering topics, right? And trigger warnings necessarily usually have some sort of support contact conventionally offered with them. I would make sure that was in there when I sent it back to them. And I'll just check in with them. I'd check in with them before the interview, while we were doing the interview, straight after the interview. And then again, when I send the interview for them to have a listen at every point along the way, I'll be like, how are you going with this? Are you still okay with this? You can pull the pin on this if you feel like you want to pull the pin. That's fine. We don't have to do it. Like at every point along the process, from first thinking of the idea for the interview to actually publishing it, I'll be checking in with my guest. And then, of course, also letting them know that even after it's been published, let's say if it's a radio or a podcast, at any point they do have the option to contact me and unpublish it and take it offline or whatever. So that's what I would do. That's how I would handle it. Other people might do it different, but that would be my approach for sure.
Yes. So the last question's from Mel. I've just asked Nikki if you could please share your experience of using Zoom for recorded videos.
From an audio point of view, I'd say just think about some of the stuff that I talked about earlier about. Definitely I would do a sound check, whether it was audio or video. I would see if I could do a sound check prior to the interview. I mean, like, or maybe at least a week prior to the interview, just to see, and then record the sound check, like do like not an interview about the interview you're going to do, but some other kind of completely unrelated made-up interview, just like, and just have a yarn with them, and, you know, for at least 5 or 10 minutes. And so then you can listen back and get a good idea of how's it going to sound. And if it's for video, I would imagine, how's it going to look? Are they going to need extra lighting? Are they going to maybe need some help, maybe getting a $30 headset or whatever, you know, depending what your budget is and what your capacity is and what their capacity is, in terms of getting extra help or extra equipment. But yeah, I would definitely recommend do a sound check. Like if it was for something really important, for a big project, you want to do that sound check for sure.